This is NASCAR driver Tony Breidinger inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for my favorite craveable chicken fingers. Turbocharge your order and get it even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app. Raising Cane's chicken fingers, one love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
What does motion sound like? With Kizikans free shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Hey, welcome to IKEA, where even this desk is circular.
Huh. How so? Looks pretty rectangular to me.
It's because we're always looking to repair, reuse, and relove our products, like buying back your IKEA items for store credit. Or shop our as-is section for great deals. You can even order free spare parts. Get on the circular path for a more sustainable future.
Still a rectangle.
Get started at ikea-usa.com/circular. Visit ikea-usa.com/circular for as-is information and buyback and resale terms and conditions. Spare parts not available for all products.
At Jared, we know devotion isn't a once-a-year occasion. And once the flowers have wilted and the chocolates have disappeared, you'll still want them to know how much you care. Dare to give a gift that lasts this Valentine's Day with our incredible selection of jewelry. From delicate rose gold to bold black diamonds, Jared has hundreds of pieces under $299 and exclusive collections you won't find anywhere else. Shop online or find a store near you at jared.com and dare to be devoted.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Troy Nunes is an Absolute Podcast. I'm your host, as always, John Casillo, and with me today is Dan Lyons.
Hello, everyone. Happy it's not this weekend anymore week.
Happy Thanksgiving week.
Thanksgiving is also a thing that is happening.
Q's in the city is dead. Long live Q's in the city.
What a great 3-day stretch here in my wonderful city, where every day just cascaded downwards.
This was like the perfect Viking funeral for the Dr. Gross era that like we never got.
Oh God!
just light the raft on fire, like
if Gross
in the Hudson.
Just quit on Sunday.
And just put every artifact from the Gross era onto a raft and set it on fire in the Hudson and watch it just sink.
So anyway.
We're gonna talk about those games a little bit before we get to what's happening next for Syracuse Iron Sports. Not a super busy week on the basketball front, in part because of, you know, last week's travesties and also Thanksgiving. Syracuse has one more regular season game left in football. We'll talk hoops a little bit first and then get into football in the second half, I think. And this will be the last real, I mean, we still have the bowl game and everything. We might do a bowl specific preview. We'll see. This is going to be like the last combo podcast, at least for active season. So for those wanting
the last
more
really
hoops,
packed one, which is nice.
Yeah, I think we're good at being football fans of both teams, but I don't think, we're good at being Syracuse fans of both football and basketball, but I don't necessarily think we're as good at the balancing act on the podcast. So in advance, I will apologize. But yeah, so basketball was bad for myriad reasons. I would say most of which being that Tyus Battle did not shoot all that well or efficiently. O'Shea Brissett also didn't shoot all that well or efficiently. And then Frank Howard wasn't in. And I'd say, like, as much as I think there's some merit to the don't judge this team until Frank's back line of thinking, there's also just the major concern that, like, A, the defense actually looked pretty horrendous the last three games now. After a really strong start against East Washington, this team can't hit from outside, and like Frank's not necessarily going to buoy that. And in general, again, the fact that the two non-Frank scorers are just not—they're not looking all that great. I mean, Battle had 17 against Oregon, but like all largely for naught and still very inefficient. I'm concerned that Frank's not the only problem here.
Yeah, I was all aboard the I'm not going to worry about like not great looking performances until Frank gets back, but that doesn't account for like the team just not looking like they're prepared to play. Like, I expect there to be struggles without your starting point guard, but I don't expect it to be like an effort thing or a like just like completely lost thing. And this weekend, like, the team just didn't look prepared to play either of those games, which is not good. And then the defense was a major issue. I think Frank will help with the defense because he's at the top of the zone. He's been in it for so long. And clearly the young guys are not there yet. But, like, you still have Battle. You still have Brissette, who became a very good defender last year. You still have Chukwu, who was in the middle of the zone last year and doesn't look markedly better so far. And he still has major foul issues. Like, Marek seems to not really have found himself yet this year, which we all thought, you know, after the end of last year, maybe he would kind of come in with that swaggering confidence he showed in the tournament. So
it just looks like a kid who ate too much pizza over the offseason.
Oh, God. Oh, I don't know. I feel like maybe if pizza has other effects, like, I don't know that he's much bigger. But if there are, like, negative other basketball effects, maybe. So it's still early, but, like, Frank being out doesn't account for, like, effort. And that's my biggest issue. And I don't know if it's just, like, a comfort thing. Everyone feels out of position. But the guy who, like, actually seemed to acquit himself the best this weekend, and granted he had turnover issues and whatnot, was Jalen Terry, who wasn't here last year. So I thought his scoring was maybe the one bright spot, but, like, that doesn't lift, you know, Battle being completely unable to hit from deep, and Hughes, you know, wasn't, you know, anything super special this weekend. Brissette just had probably his worst game ever against, which game was it where he was, like, 1 for 9 from three? Was that UConn or Oregon?
I can't recall either.
I think that was Oregon.
Could have been Oregon. Sign of how bad things were against Oregon, that Brissette led the team in assists.
It was Oregon. He was 1 for 9 from three. He was 1 for 4 against UConn. He was 5 for 27 for the weekend.
After a really strong first two games.
Yeah, he had what, 17 and 13, and then 20 and 8 in the first game. So, like, he looked like himself. You know, still not hitting from the field at a super high clip, but, like, he looked like last year's Brissette, maybe, like, a little step forward. And this year, I mean, this weekend he played two of his worst games in Orange, which you don't expect from a young sophomore.
No, not at all. I'd say, yeah, like, for all the encouraging things we had from Elijah Hughes early, I feel like these past two games, not so much. Carey probably impressed the most of anyone, if only because of how he bounced back so well. In that first game against UConn, like, he ended up scoring 26. And that was, you know, after a really rough start, 4 turnovers, really looked like he was kind of shrinking in the moment. And then suddenly, you know, kind of really had some offensive burst for the latter part of, you know, his time on the court. And he really looked like one of the veterans on the team, you know, by the end of this disastrous weekend, while a lot of these, you know, actual veterans look like the guys who hadn't been this offense. I mean, like you said, you know, Frank makes a difference on both ends, I agree, but he's not going to make 25 points worth of difference defensively. Like, no defender is. Like, no defender is worth that many points, you know, above your, like, your average.
No, I think if we had Frank this weekend playing at 100%, I think we probably beat UConn. We probably beat, like, and I don't think UConn's that good. We probably beat UConn.
Then we get smoked by Iowa.
And we have gotten destroyed by Iowa. Iowa shoots the hell out of the ball, and it would have been pretty ugly. Or if we had Frank against Oregon, I don't think it would have made that much of a difference. Oregon just, I think honestly, Bol Bol set the tempo for the game early on, just because he's so intimidating inside and he's such a presence. And then we were just out of it from the jump.
Well, you and I said too when we previewed that game, that potential game last week, that Bol Bol was probably just going to have his way, and, like, you know, his numbers against Iowa didn't necessarily seem indicative of it, but, like, it seemed pretty obvious on paper that, like, he was somebody who could really just abuse SU. And the fact that he could even hit threes, like, he's got the range that, like, you know, Chukwu is a good shot blocker, but he's also a very stationary defender at times. And when we don't necessarily have, like, a lot of other, you know, interior help, especially if Marek's not going to be playing at his highest level, that's how a guy like that, who can play inside and outside, he can hit mid-range, he can do a lot of things inside beyond just, you know, posting up. Like, that's how a guy like Bol Bol has, like, not a career game necessarily, but, you know, a pretty impressive effort by and large.
Yeah, and Bol Bol's really good. Bol Bol is a big problem for teams all year. Like, that three-point range wasn't new. Like, that was the thing coming in for him. He has really, really nice touch around the basket. He's a really impressive player. So I think we'll hear a lot from him going forward. But, you know, you're Syracuse. You deal with these kind of players. Like, you play them every year. We're going to see 3 Bol Bols against Duke later this year. So not the same type of player, but same caliber of prospect. So we have to, you know, this team really needs to wake up, because that was a very disheartening performance just overall. Like, the UConn game was tough. For different reasons, but I, you know, we still could have pulled that one out. Oregon just outclassed us, and Oregon, you know, was coming off a loss the night before. So it just, you know, overall, just very disheartening weekend for SU basketball. Doesn't mean they can't get it going. You know, we've seen bad stretches of basketball. Pretty much, like, I feel like every year we have, like, some weird week or two where we just look completely lost.
This is rarely this early.
It's rarely this early, and it's usually after we've kind of built up some clout, which we have not had a chance to do this year. Like, you know, a couple years ago, we won the tournament in the Bahamas. We beat UConn and who else is in A&M. That tournament? No, and A&M, who ended up being, like, a 3 seed.
Yeah.
So, you know, we had that to fall back on, and we're like, all right, well, we know what we can do when we get back to playing that way, and we ended up riding to a really nice tournament run. We haven't done anything this year. This is, like, the first semblance of, like, big play we've had. So it's I think that makes it even harder to swallow. Yet, that being said, like, it is also very early, and we also know, based on history, like, with Syracuse and other teams, if Frank comes back and that makes a difference and the team starts to roll, like, we'll recover from these two losses, and we'll get the benefit of the doubt if we're near the cut line with Frank being out. That being said, Frank being out is definitely not the only issue with this team. Not far from it.
Yeah, 100%. I think I forgot which teams. It was the 05-06 team, and there was one other one in there that Brent Axe tweeted out that also started 2-2. So it was worth noting that both of those teams made the NCAAs. Obviously, you know, previous results don't indicate future returns. But yeah, I think what concerns me here is that, like, UConn, I could have seen the loss coming and kind of did in my mind, even if I wasn't going to predict it, because I didn't think we would, but I could see how it could happen. If only because, like, UConn is just infinitely more motivated for that game. And
oh, you could tell, like, their fans.
Of course, their fans. Hurley gets it.
Hurley looked like a 9-year-old on a sugar high the whole game. They were very amped up. Way more so. The fan breakdown, I was at MSG for that game. Like, the fan breakdown was definitively more Syracuse, but once the UConn fans got, like, smelled a little bit of blood, they were in full force. Syracuse fans tried to rally a bit, but UConn fans really wanted that one.
Oh, yeah. They worked themselves up into a lather. I mean, even more so than Georgetown fans do against us. And, like, you see it in person, you can see it online. Like, it's obvious how much they want it. The players want it. Like, Hurley leaned right into that, and good for him for intrinsically understanding that dynamic immediately.
Just meanwhile, Boeheim laughed at him, which was great.
Also that. But, like, yeah.
Boeheim's like, we're going to be okay.
And we totally are. But, like, see, I could see us, like, losing that game and then, like, giving Oregon a game even if we did lose. But, like, to be just utterly, like, outclassed and defeated the way we were against the Ducks, like, that to me is pretty concerning. And, like, the Colgate game coming up, that's a welcome respite from that level of competition. But then, you know, Ohio State, Georgetown's going to be better than they were last year, and they gave us some struggles last year. ODU is no pushover. Buffalo's ranked. Ohio State game, by the way, you can get in the building for $5, apparently.
Even though they're ranked number 23 in the country and have looked really good, which is
football school.
Yes, like us, also a football
noted women's basketball school, Syracuse. Since we don't really have many other things to hang our hats on after last week.
No, unfortunately, soccer also bowed out. Really, cross-country school.
Cross-country also lost this weekend.
That's still, I mean, they have a recent...
No, I know. But
they can...
They did not perform as well as they were supposed to this weekend either.
Of course.
The struggle. So yeah, Colgate, I know James wrote up something today, Monday, for those listening, about Frank potentially returning against Colgate. I think maybe we see it. I'd love to see him return before Ohio State. Otherwise, like, I'm getting very concerned about that Buckeyes game. Like, this team can't be 3-3 heading into December. Does that really, I think, with or without Frank, really, I mean, with Frank, it's terrifying. Without Frank, I think it really does reset expectations, though, where the demand on what you need to do in the ACC goes up exponentially once you start picking up, you know, 2 losses you can handle. I thought we could potentially go undefeated not in conference play this year. Like, 2 losses you can handle, 3, getting into maybe 4, like, that's where things get incredibly problematic. And where, yeah, like, it doesn't matter. If you pick up enough wins in conference play, you're fine. But, like, there becomes a much bigger dynamic of, like, you just need to win games. Like, it's not even about who you're beating. It's about the fact you need to pick up enough wins, you know, to make the field. And I don't think we're going to be, you know, near that cut line. But again, like, if these concerns that you and I both just expressed continue, you know, even when Frank's back, like, this season gets very dangerous in a hurry. And like, I don't want to be an alarmist. I think that we're going to be fine, but just pointing out what can happen if we start taking on a little water.
Yeah, getting Frank back for Colgate, I have no idea whether or not to expect it. It would be nice, as I don't think throwing him into at Ohio State as his first live beam action is necessarily the best spot, or even like beyond that. Like, Buffalo looks really good. I don't think we'll have to wait that long for him, but like, the games aren't that much easier than like Georgetown comes up pretty quick on December 8th. You want to get him like settled in playing some of those easier opponents. Like, you know, there's a reason we have these exhibitions before the year. So he hasn't had that opportunity. And even like with Jalen Carey, like he didn't play super well the first two games. He's played better, and it's a harder competition because I think he's had a chance to settle in and kind of get the kinks worked out a bit. So I think Frank will hopefully get an opportunity for a little bit more of that leeway time.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think in general, like, we're going to have some patience. And I just, because of how this year's schedule was constructed, patience, and this is something that, like, I know James and I alluded to in the basketball season preview podcast, was like, because of how this season was constructed, we only had two games to really get ready for things. And with injuries, like, that was going to cause some problems. That's how you start 2-2. That's how you could potentially start 3-3. Is just because you didn't have enough time to get through those injuries and get those guys, even if back, get them back at 100%. And I think, you know, that if we find ourselves closer to the cut line than we maybe thought we were going to be this year, that's the story of how that happened, I think, is how the schedule laid out compared to injuries. And I would almost guarantee that, like, when people start asking about the schedule, that Boeheim has some things to say about it.
Yeah, he'll play the game, and we know Boeheim, you know, kind of works people well come March, but, you know, it'd be nice to not have to sweat out a March or a Selection Sunday for the first time in a while, even if the results have been good once we've gotten there. I still like the whole, like, oh, let's see where we're seated versus the let's see if we're in.
Oh, yeah. No, I definitely hated it the first 2 years I was at Syracuse. When the second year I knew we weren't in. The first year I thought we were in. That would be 06-07 and 07-08 for those playing along at home. And then we had a nice little run thereafter of making the field and looking pretty good and all that, interrupted by some sanctions, some unexpected departures. Yeah, I'd much rather prefer we get back to consistently being on, you know, one of the first four lines, or something close to it.
Sounds good. Sounds good to me. And I think everyone listening would probably agree. Not that we don't appreciate the endless drama that is Syracuse basketball.
Endless drama, really, Syracuse athletics in general. I think we, I know that we're close to it, so that's part of what shapes our general perspective. But I do think that there is just like this odd amount of like randomness and intrigue and drama and theater that goes with Syracuse. And like, I think Boeheim is a large part of some of that because of the theater that he creates on his own. But I mean, it does extend to most of the other sports, and I wouldn't have it any other way in some cases, but in others, I could go with like a stress-free, just like, give me like, just I'll take one. Give me one like athletic year from late August to May of just like minimal to no drama, meeting expectations or falling slightly short of them, but like not going wildly in one direction or the other, and just like, Just no off the field, off the court stuff. No media battles. Like any, just one season of it. Like this is the type of time where like you wish you were Purdue,
like current Purdue.
Like yeah, like current Purdue. Just like, oh, okay.
I mean, and they might lose their coach, but
yeah. But like in general, like okay, you met expectations. Like you did what you across the board. You do what you're supposed to.
What was the last time we had a year like that? Because I can't remember one. We've either had like a tumultuous basketball season. Or, like, we haven't had very many, like cause our mediocre football seasons have been, like, kind of big achievements. or there's, like, coaching changes, or there's they're bad. And then the basketball team is either, like, really bad, really good, or something crazy happens. Not really bad. Really bad by our standards, which is, like, cut line of the tournament.
Yeah, I can't remember one, because you figure something like that has happened every single year. That like in one sport or another, every year that I've been, I mean, if not at the time, then afterward, like, oh yeah. Like, I mean, even my senior year. So 2009, 2010, like We were number one.
The Arinze stuff.
Yeah, we were number one. Yeah, but then, yeah, the Arinze stuff, the fact that we lost to Butler, like, all of those, like, all of that just completely changes the narrative on everything. The entire time since I was a freshman, there's been something. The year before I was a freshman was the McNamara run through the tournament. Like, the year before that, maybe? Was the year before that? Was it? The year before that might have been the Vermont game. It was either that year or the year before.
I think that was the Vermont game.
Yeah, like, this is what I mean. Like, every goddamn
maybe it was the year between the tournament, or from the championship and the Vermont game.
But even then, but even then, it was minus Carmelo. It was changing the team name.
Oh, I forgot that's when that happened. And what did the football team do in 03-04? Is that the last year of Pete?
Yes.
Yep. Of course.
This is to me, like, this whole athletic program is just, like, stupid. Like, every single year, there's even if you just confine it to football and basketball, there's something.
Yep. There's never just, like, a year that just goes by without, like, a crazy event that takes up, like, a month of drama.
Yeah, and, like, it's not like we're in a big media market. It's not like it's not fueled by the fact that we have a lot of alums in sports media. I don't think it's fueled by the fan base's obsession with basketball in particular. I honestly just think we just have this weird, like, ability to attract, like, drama and noise. Maybe noise is the better, because noise can be good or bad.
I think that's a good definition for it.
Yeah. Syracuse, the noisiest program that rarely wins anything. Prove me
no
wrong.
One's allowed to use it against us, so hopefully, I mean, I can't imagine we have a UConn fan. Actually, you know what? If there's a second a program that or a fan base that's second most likely to listen to ours, maybe redacting Tulane, it's probably UConn.
Oh, UConn hate listens the shit out of this, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's remarkable. I would also, like, wouldn't mind, like, just a year of, like, the teams played, they were okay.
They were fine.
We had some ups and downs, they were all pretty much based on what happened on the court and on the field.
Like, could you imagine if we were, like, we just Wake Forest?
Just a little better in basketball.
Yeah, a little better in basketball.
Our standards are much higher.
Yeah, maybe a little worse in the, like, non-rev sports.
Yeah, we're like, oh, we made the Sweet 16. It was, you know, it was decent year. And then football went 7-5, made the Pinstripe Bowl. It was cool. Coach stayed.
Coach
same coach last year.
You know, men's soccer won a couple games. Whatever. We're
cool.
Nice.
It'd be nice. The site probably wouldn't do as well.
No, probably wouldn't. Before we get to halftime, did want to mention something football. I'm sure you caught this. I know you caught this. Some Syracuse fans might have seen the drama that was unfolding with Notre Dame fans getting really irate about Dino going for field goal.
I did see this. What was that?
Like, you people can just shut up. Like, who cares? Like, this is, like, such, like, an old school, like, baseball, like, mentality, like, this old guard nonsense where, like, Dino's petty because he tried a field goal at the end of the game.
He wasn't petty. He won. I don't care if we got shut out or not. I don't think that's what he was doing. I honestly think he was just giving Andre a kick because he missed a really bad one earlier, and he's also going for a record. Like, who cares?
That's the other
who
thing.
Cares,
like,
if Notre Dame didn't shut us out. No one's gonna be like, Notre Dame didn't play as well because they gave up 3 points.
It's like, yeah, it's like, my bad. Like,
Notre Dame played amazing. They were amazing all game.
Right. We can put in the record book that, like, you guys got the official shutout, and, like, that goes towards your career total. Like, I don't understand, like, why it matters. Because it doesn't.
What did that, like, it didn't hurt them in any way. And nothing about us scoring 3 points made their day worse. Like, right. It didn't make my day better either, really. Like, it didn't affect the enjoyment or anything. It made Andre, like, the only thing that was affected was that Andre Schmidt is now one kick closer from an FBS record and set an ACC record, which is pretty cool. And I don't really know if that's what Dino was going for it or if he just wanted Andre to, like, not
shake
finish
off the
his
love.
Day with
yeah.
a 23-year-old shank. Or 23-yard, not year-old, yard shank.
I just don't get it because, like, there's – like, would Notre Dame fans rather that we tried to score on fourth down and then one of their linebackers broke his arm on the play? Like
– Yeah, it was absolutely probably one of the most low-risk things that could have happened. aside from us taking a knee for some reason, which wouldn't have happened. Like, we weren't going to do, obviously. So, like, what do you want? Like, whose day was made worse because of that? I don't know.
Well, the thing is, their fans would have gotten pissed off if an injury had happened to them, if we'd gone for it at the end.
Of course. And, like, we kicked it, and it was, if like, a couple of fans were just like, you know what, like, they really didn't need to kick that. Whatever.
Who cares?
They were, like, They were so mad. You would have acted like we were up 70 and we're going for, and left our first string in and we're going for touchdowns with the way they were acting at the end of that game.
Well, it's very much like we need not just the pelt, but we need like the pride of your humiliation. Like,
yeah.
And then like, to me, that's just like that's dog shit. Like that's not sportsmanship. That's not anything. Like you're just assholes. Like you don't need the pride of humiliating us with a shutout. Like we're like, don't worry, you humiliated
us. We're
also
not even rivals. Like, right. Why do you care? You used us as an opportunity to play in New York City, and we were happy to oblige. Like, what was this for you? What was that shutout supposed to signify? You're number three in the playoff rankings, just like you were before, just like you would have been if you shut us out. You played as well as humanly possible in that game. And no one in the Syracuse that was taking anything away from Notre Dame. Any Syracuse fan you ask is like, Notre Dame kicked the shit out of us. Right. And rightfully so. They played so much better than us. And even if Dungy had played, it might have been marginally better, but it wouldn't have changed the outcome at all. So what? Like, I'm so confused as to their anger about that.
I have plenty more to say about the outcome of that game, but I think let's go to halftime, and then we'll jump to that. Dan, I'm sure you were busy drinking this weekend.
Yeah, I drank plenty. I kept it to a couple of beers. I'm trying to remember, go back to where we were last time. We last recorded on the 12th, right?
Sure. Was that last Monday?
Yes. Yes. So I think during that podcast, I was drinking some District 6 IPA from Wolf Hollow. I had some more of that during the week because we have cans in our fridge now. Shout out to them. I had a pale sour ale from Omegang, which I had not had. I think it's a fairly recent thing for them. Really good. Not surprising. Omegang does everything really well. But their pale sour is really delicious. Really nice balance between those two styles. And kind of like exactly what you want out of it, where it's like a nice tartness, but it's not like, you know, some people just really turned off by sour ales, which I get, but even though I enjoy them. And then the really drinkability of the pale ale, which is nice. I also had some Syracuse Pale Ale at East End Bar and Grill during our live podcast event last Friday. I actually didn't end up having any Bud Lights after all of our jokes last week. I did have some SPAs, which was nice. It's like, you know, you usually don't find that down here. And also some New York Pale Ale, which I then also had during the game from Ithaca. So had plenty of those. Shout out to everyone who came out last week. And thank you for putting up with our early audio issues and then asking us questions and whatnot when we finally got things sorted out. It was cool to see all the turnout there. So yeah, pretty, not a ton of different beers, but plenty of the ones I did have.
Fair enough. On my end, not crazy, but had a St. Arnold Divine Reserve number 18. It's a barrel-aged stout from them. Firestone Lager, because I had a couple of those hanging around. Had the last of the Mumford third term that I'd mentioned last week. Pizza Port had a new hazy IPA in cans, Over the Falls. That one was pretty good. Wasn't like overly juicy, which I prefer. So that one was enjoyable. Some people who follow like California beer in general might know of Kern River's Citra annual release. Pretty big deal. Not as much now as it used to be. It was kind of like up there with Pliny and some of the other like early, you know, West Coast IPAs and things and double IPAs that really set the standard. So that actually ended up being on draft at one of my favorite local spots. So made sure to head down there and checked out one of those. It did not disappoint. Very glad that I got to give it a try. So yeah, nothing super eventful, but some good options nonetheless.
Yeah, sir. We certainly needed it after the weekend that was.
Indeed. Speaking of that, might as well talk about the Eric Dungy stuff first and foremost. Dungy only took about 9 snaps. I thought that the 9 snaps that he took looked terrible all around. That's not an indictment on him as much as just what Notre Dame was able to do to us. And also I thought that play design-wise was just leaning so heavily on the pass when we ended up being able to run the ball pretty well all game. Was unfortunate. I felt like designed runs for Dungy early in a game against a very physical Notre Dame defense also seemed like a poor idea. And whether coincidentally or not, it ended up leading to not only an interception, play calling in general leading to an interception, but him running probably either by choice or by play design, you know, led to his absence from the game for almost the entirety of it, which was not great.
Yeah, the whole thing was so bizarre because he looked, you know, he ran that play where he basically just took it up the middle and, like, you know, gained a couple yards, came up, looked like he was ready to hit the snap, and then just went down like, you know, he was taken out by a sniper. And, like, that was so disconcerting because there was no indication 3 seconds earlier that he was hurt. Yeah, so I agreed with, like, he didn't play well early on. I still think after watching DeVito struggle that if there was a chance for us to stay competitive in that game, I think it would have been better with Dungy just because our receivers just were not getting open on Saturday.
No.
I think with DeVito, like, he is more arm talent. I think he'll probably end up being the more accurate thrower. I think Dungy might be there depending on the day right now. DeVito throws a nicer ball, but Dungy can make more things happen. And when you have Notre Dame locking down your receivers, you know, there might be more room for improvisation. So I kind of feel like we would have been a little closer if Dungy had stayed in there and we kind of figured out some way to gain yards on top of Moneal, who looked tremendous for until Notre Dame decided to just lock that up. But yeah, it just hopefully he can go, if not BC, for the bowl game, because it would be really devastating for him to miss the first bowl game where he was such a big part of getting here. But the most important thing is that he's healthy, and it sounded like Dino hinted at it being, like, better than it was after the game with the whole weird hot tub thing this morning. Who knows what that was all about. But I think the takeaway there is that Dino was hinting at, like, things are moving, you know, there's progress being made. That all being said, I think, you know, if Dungy's not, like, close to 100, if not 100%, but, like, close to, like, 85-90%, play DeVito against BC. It's not worth getting Dungy. Like, we've made a bowl game. It'd be nice to get to the 9 wins, but we're still sitting at 8-3. Play DeVito if Dungy is at any risk of making that worse, and let's get him ready for December.
Oh, 100%. I would hope and think, to be honest, that Dungy would agree with that sentiment. I mean, I don't really know what to take from, like, Dino understands how to play the ACC's injury reporting rules to be as coy as humanly possible. Today's hot tub comments, which we ran with the hot tub dime machine as the television show that would result from Dino, Dungy, and DeVito hanging out in a hot tub every Sunday dissecting plays. So Syracuse, feel free to take that because I just want to write about it. But yeah, I think Dungy should probably sit it unless he's, like, doing really well. I would bet, based on what we saw on Saturday, he's not doing very well, or at least not doing well enough to really be, like, you know, in the state to do more for us than DeVito could. Like you said, I think DeVito's going to end up probably being the more accurate passer. He threw a nice ball, and honestly, like, it's a totally different game if Nyheim Johnson holds on to that would-be touchdown pass early when DeVito got in. It was a gorgeous ball right in the end zone. Johnson had it, unfortunately got stripped on the way down, had that tip ball from Taj Harris. That was problematic. Like, there was, and Harris had a great game, 5 catches, 78 yards, but in general, like, our receivers just didn't have it. And once they knew they didn't really have to worry about the run with DeVito, even though he had a run in there, they basically just blitzed the hell out of him. Offensive line looked terrible. And that's saying a lot, considering that this offensive line has actually looked really good for much of this season, both, you know, blocking for the run, which has been much improved, and the pass, which, you know, Dungy's probably had more time, you know, in the backfield to throw the football than he has probably his entire career to this point.
No, I agree. I think that Nyheim play, I do think that really would have swung things and given us some much-needed momentum, especially because I believe that was his first play in, right?
Yeah.
We put DeVito in, and he let it rip off the jump, and I loved that. I was all in for just being aggressive and trying to make something of the game, especially because at that point in the game, the defense had both – it was doing exactly what we have talked about, where they, you know, let teams go down the field, and then they get into the red zone, and they really tighten up. And we had held Notre Dame, like, we could have been down big at that point. We were still in it. So it's really unfortunate. There's not much more you can do there. And there were a couple of those plays where, like, what, like the play, the tipped interception, like, just so many unfortunate plays where there was really nothing more that could have honestly been done Also the strip on the sideline, which we were probably out of it by that point, but at least, you know, we had a chance to make something happen.
20 to nothing. If you swing, like, we had three big momentum swing opportunities. There was the Nikeem Johnson ball that would have put it, I think we were only down 13-0 at the time.
Yeah, it would have been 13-6 or 7.
Yeah, 13-7. Like that would have been a big swing, and then we wouldn't have had to been so one dimensional going forward, even though I do think we should have run the ball more. Obviously Andre Sisco's interception on the fourth and goal, inside the one, where, you know, I didn't even know why Ian Book threw that ball, to be honest, but doesn't matter. Sisco, obviously with the nose of the ball as always, picked up another interception. That was a potential opportunity swing that we didn't do anything. And then, yeah, like the fact that the referees didn't even like think to review a clear strip by Trill, you know, can't be overstated how much, you know, the two freshmen have impacted things all year with Trill and Sisco in the secondary, but two of them made some really, really big plays in this game. And I think, you know, if any of those, if they had done anything with the Sisco play, and then if they had actually, if the Nikeem Johnson would be touchdown and the Trill strip, if either of those things happen, I think you're looking at least a slightly different game, even if the final outcome in terms of win or loss is similar.
It would have been a game where we weren't getting yelled at for taking a field goal late, and it would have just been, you know, a closer, better show. Yeah, I don't know how that strip didn't get reviewed. That was horrendous. It was so clear watching it the first time, and then every replay just made it more obvious. So that was very disappointing. And, like, honestly, like, it, you know, at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter how bad you lose to Notre Dame by, but, like, there is something to, you know, hanging in the game and making it respectable. Yeah, so it just really disappointing with those plays. I actually thought, like, until the wheels came off, the defense just made, you know, play after play in big spots to keep us at least somewhat respectable down the stretch. And also, Notre Dame ran for 171 yards, but it wasn't like they ran all over us. Like they didn't
top 100 until garbage time.
Like, yeah, and it was when Wimbush came in and he broke a big one. And the defense, you know, the game was well in hand. It was Ian Book that beat us, and he was really impressive. Better than I expected. I knew he was like a good quarterback and best quarterback for that team. He was really picking us apart, and I know we our defense has a tendency to give up yardage. But he just, aside from you know, a couple of the interception, and a couple other plays, like, he really did a nice job of finding open guys, and their receivers just really exploited our zone pretty badly. So yeah, I mean, the nice thing is we're not going to play another team instead of Notre Dame, but. Overall, like, we had the number three team in the country lined up, and when we certainly found out what that looks like, even more so than the Clemson game. Although I think last year beating Clemson probably gave us, like, you know, that belief that and that lack of intimidation versus, I don't know that we were intimidated, but it just seemed like
we didn't look ready.
We didn't have the same. We didn't look ready, and we probably didn't have that. We haven't played Notre Dame in a couple of years, so, and then both teams are radically different since last time we did. So there wasn't that, like, oh, we just beat these guys last year. There's nothing to be afraid of, even if we're down here now.
Yeah, they were definitely unfamiliar with personnel. I feel like they were unfamiliar with the physicality that Notre Dame brought in the trenches. That was really where the game was won and lost, to be honest, on both ends, was just in the trenches. Notre Dame's offensive line performed admirably. Though they did let up some pressure here and there, they mostly stopped Book from getting sacked. I think they only ended up with two sacks on the game for Syracuse. Like, and there were a lot of other plays where they could have gotten to him, but, like, for the most part, like, Book, like he has all season, had a quick release, was super accurate. And we've said time and time again, like, Syracuse's success on defense is dictated in part, you know, situationally. Obviously, we saw that time and time again with how we were able to stop them in the red zone, make them settle for field goals, keep the game close for longer than it should have been. And then, you know, third downs, we've been very good. But when teams are able to get, you know, when they were able to move the ball, they're moving the ball so often on first and second down, they never get to that third down spot. And obviously, like, a lot of that's based on pressure too, where if SU can apply pressure to you and SU can force you to throw, Notre Dame kind of leaned into throwing the football because they understood just in the trenches that they could stop us, you know, on that blitz. So I think that was some food for thought, but it's also worth noting that, like, Notre Dame also probably has the best offensive line that we're going to face. I think BC, before the season, was definitely seen as one of the best offensive lines in the conference. I think they still are, but I think they might have been at least a little bit overhyped going into this season if we want to take that segue into this coming week's matchup.
Yeah, I think we're getting like seriously undervalued after this Notre Dame game against BC, against BC coming up, because I would almost wager to say losing by one to Florida State is as bad or worse than losing by 33 to Notre Dame at this point.
Yes.
And also, BC is nowhere near. I know we're not, but they're really not healthy.
Yeah, I mean, Brown played last week, and he actually didn't look half bad, but he's definitely not 100%. A.J. Dillon's not 100% at all. Again, we mentioned this in the last couple weeks. Dillon is definitely succumbing to overuse and just a lingering injury as probably a result of overuse. You know, BC likes to play a physical style. They just haven't looked as crisp in the second half of the season. And the last 2 weeks have been against, you know, teams that should be physically more talented than them and are, especially in the sense of Clemson. But, like, this offense has kind of gone off the rails a little bit. And I think that does give an opening for Syracuse they might not have had, you know, even, like, 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, I'm pretty confident. I don't think it's a slam dunk at all. I think BC's defense is really good and probably not as good as Notre Dame's, but they play very well and they're very. I mean, the last couple of years they've been just very like they do what they need to do. Even in that Clemson game, like they were very much outmatched talent wise, but they held the Tigers pretty well. Their offense is turned going, especially once Brown went out. But if Dillon can't go, I'm just not that worried about this offense. I think Brown's solid and his style scares me a bit, but I don't think he's like a super great talent. I'd say that totally realizing we offered him. I feel good about our quarterback situation, whether it's DeVito or Dungy. But I also think on defense, like, they're just not going to be able to gobble us up the way Notre Dame did. Notre Dame has 4 stars and 5 stars flying all over the place. BC plays really well on defense, and they're sound.
But they're opportunistic, but like we are.
They're opportunistic, and I don't think they're going to be able to just engulf our receiving core as the Notre Dame secondary did.
Yeah, I completely buy that. I think, you know, just like we don't engulf anybody on defense, really, especially in the back seven either. Like, BC, a lot of their success on defense is based on turnovers. They have a couple good cover guys. But in general, like, it's based on, you know, flipping the field and taking advantage of, you know, mistakes. And that's something that I'm not going to discount because we're doing the same thing. But it's to point out that, like, this isn't a talent. This isn't the type of thing where we have to make up for a talent gap. This is just, you know, whose scheme's better, whose players are going to be able to outmatch the others this given Saturday. I think there's definitely a much different vibe heading into this game. And I think, if anything, like, I don't necessarily believe always in the, like, you know, snap back to reality loss. But I think a lot of Syracuse players might at least be viewing BC a lot differently than had they, you know, played very close against Notre Dame or potentially even won. I think we're actually in a good spot where, you know, we can make corrections. There's things to point to from last week's tape to go, this didn't work, this didn't work, this was a disaster, and here's how we can fix this.
Yeah, I think that's all very valid. Did I see correctly the line was like 7.5 to open?
Line 7.5 to open. I think that's high with or without Dungy, especially with him. I'd put it around 3.5, 4 favor of BC at their own home field.
Yeah, I cannot. I hope it's the same when I get over to Jersey tomorrow. I cannot wait to throw in a bet on that. That is even if DeVito plays, that is outrageous. And I know DeVito looked bad against Notre Dame. So I think we've talked about, you know, just before, like, it was bad, but it could have been a lot better if, like, a couple of balls he put right on the money were caught. But against BC, I have faith in DeVito playing a pretty solid game, especially when he has all week to prepare for it as QB1, assuming we know, you know, relatively early whether or not Dungy can go. I'm looking, I think S&P Plus really didn't change for the matchup because of BC's loss being probably about as ours in terms of what the numbers look like. I think it stated exactly at, like, the same, or right around the same. They have BC as a 53% chance to win, so I think that's probably pretty... I think that's pretty fair. I think that reflects more accurately what we thought the line would be, which was, like, probably BC minus 2.5 to 3.5 with that 3-point home field swing.
Yeah, I completely buy that. I think, you know, again, like considering that they're that feels like they're just assuming that Brown is 100% healthy and that Dylan's 100% healthy, and we know neither of those are legit. There's also just the chance too that Vegas is trying to get dumb bettors heading into Thanksgiving, and like seeing people overreact to Syracuse's loss to Notre Dame, maybe see it as an opportunity to make some easy money on their end. So we'll see what that looks like. I was looking at just at the box scores from Anthony Brown just to kind of see like what we're looking at here. I mean, I've seen a little bit of BC this year. Haven't ignored the Eagles, but like this past week was his second best game in terms of passing yardage. He still only hit 50% of his passes. He hasn't really thrown well all year, and he's not really much. He hasn't been a running threat this year. You look at the numbers, 17-7 with 1,870 yards. Like, those numbers aren't that far behind Dungy's, but it's just amazing how differently they were amassed and how much more impressive Dungy's are. Because, like, you look at more than half of those touchdowns are for two games from Brown. He's got four against UMass. He had five against Wake Forest. And, you know, SU kind of tore up Wake Forest. No problem once they got going in that game. He had two against Temple. He threw four interceptions against Purdue, which was kind of like the coming back to earth moment for this Eagles team when everyone got really high on them from an expectation standpoint.
Like, it was also the double regression of the mean for both teams, because Purdue had lost, I think, three games by like a couple of points each, and then like everyone, it was pretty apparent to everyone they were not that bad, and then they flew up and went on that run.
Right. Yeah. So that was in hindsight probably expected, but in general, yeah, like these. He hasn't thrown more than one touchdown pass in a game since the Temple game on 9/29. He's only thrown for over 200 yards three times this year, and only once since September 13th. So like, you don't have to fear Brown. I don't really fear any opposing quarterback. I think for us, the what dictates a win or a loss is going to be, you know, what the run game can do to us and what the run game can do to us in a close game. Like, the reason that we were able to win the UNC game in part was because UNC had no idea what it was doing and didn't realize they were just running the ball really well against us. NC State had no ability to run the ball against us, and therefore, you know, couldn't lean on it the way they probably would have if they did have, you know, a better running back situation. Wake Forest had the ability to run on us, but fell behind too much. Like, BC, if they keep the game close, I think they win. I think Syracuse, if they win this game, probably wins by 10, because like that's the only way the math works for them in terms of this run defense.
Yeah, and even, I mean, we've also seen the things come off the rails late, even when we thought we had a pretty secure lead against Pitt, or, you know, we thought we could at least get a couple stops in Clemson. So I think we kind of do need to grow this lead, and if Dylan's healthy at all, or even if Dylan's not healthy, I assume the offensive line is pretty good for whoever the backup is. I would be way more comfortable with like a solid 2-score lead in the last couple minutes, because, I mean, the blueprint's there for how to come back against Syracuse late, and it is not what you normally find. Looks like Ben Blinds is averaging like 5.6 per carry, but only 376 yards. So it's not like there's a guy that's putting up a ton of yardage behind Dylan. So he's really the guy. What was his? I didn't watch any of the Florida State game. I know he had 116 yards, but it was really grinded out, and they just fed him the ball. And that Florida State defense isn't all that stout. How did he look? I don't know if you got to see that game.
He didn't look healthy, but he still. I mean, Florida State's defense.
He carried the ball 37 times. So.
Right, that's what I mean.
He was healthy enough.
He was healthy enough, but like, I also think like Adazio will just hand it off to him en masse. They don't really care to what extent he's healthy or not. Yeah, like, I was looking at Glynn's stats a little bit. Like, he's more of like a receiver slot type guy who just ends up getting a lot of tries. He had 23 attempts against Temple, had 16 against NC State. Like, most of these are just really just being being A.J. Dillon's, backup and injury replacement for most of those yards. In the games that Dillon's been healthy, he hasn't really amassed more than, like, 27 yards. And he is, like, a better receiving threat for the most part. But I'd say, like, Syracuse fans, you could probably compare him to, like, a Ben Lewis type, except you'd actually want to have him run a jet sweep instead of what Syracuse is doing with one Ben Lewis. But, I think that Dylan really does hold the key for them. It's not really that different from what we saw earlier this season, where we said, like, you know, how Dylan runs against this team is going to dictate the final outcome. I'm very concerned in that regard, but otherwise, like, I do think Syracuse matches up reasonably well with the Eagles otherwise.
I think on paper it's an even matchup, and I think that's very fair. I think a lot of Syracuse fans are just going to be so down on the team after what was a pretty poor performance, but we have to remember, like, it was Notre Dame. They were the number 3 team in the country for a reason. I think that was validated to all of us. And like I said earlier, like, I feel like we are getting kind of devalued now in what should be a pretty, like, coin tossy game. So I think I'm kind of going against all of that and don't feel much differently about this team than I did coming in, aside from being a little bit worried about Dungy. But I think against a non-elite athletic team, the Syracuse offense should be able to put up points against whomever. So I feel pretty good about this one. I think SU takes this one, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, we'll get to predictions in a couple minutes. I think, you know, remember, Syracuse is still 8-3. This defense is still going to bring a ton of pressure. Antoine Cordy might be back. I think I'm a lot less concerned this year about who goes at quarterback than I would be in past seasons. I just think they present different things, not necessarily, like, you know, head and shoulders above skill or production-wise. So, like, with all that in mind, I think it really just comes down to if Syracuse can start fast, and they don't have, you know, even have to start at the same, like, level of speed that they did against, like, NC State. If they can just start fast and stop BC from being able to just run the football and lean on our defensive line and exploit, you know, some over pursuit, like, this does seem like a game that Syracuse could very well win, get to 9 wins in the regular season, which would be a huge accomplishment for this program, for Dino, for these players. I think a lot of these guys understand that. I do agree with you. I don't think there's a lot of people selling their stock on this team very, very quickly based on one game. And I don't necessarily think that's fair or legitimized in any way if you look at the other results of the season.
Yeah, I think people do need to just not get lost with one game. Like, I tweeted after the game, like, no matter what happens, we even if we lose it in BC, we are still one game away from our best win total in 17 years. So, like, this wasn't all going to turn into, like, Syracuse is now going to be the Orange Bowl all the time in 1 year. We are ahead of schedule, even if things were a bit flat the first 2 seasons. So people just need to keep perspective here. The team was probably not the 12th best team in the country when we ranked that.
We
said that. I think we know the numbers indicated that. We were probably somewhere closer to, like, the 25 range, and that's fine. Like, that's a huge step forward. By year's end, things will probably get where they were supposed to be. But, yeah, like, you just can't overreact to one game because the team didn't play well. Like, if the team comes out flat in BC again, then maybe there's some cause for concern about, like, late season just, you know, lack of, I won't say motivation, I think more just not able to totally finish things out. But we had their 2-game slide earlier in the year, and we bounced back and started playing really well again, which is not a thing we are super accustomed to with this team. So I'm not totally worried. I think Babers will get things going again, and hopefully this team just gets more motivated to knock off Boston College and secure the, like, probably being, like, the definitive 3rd best team in the entire conference, which would be pretty cool to be able to say, whether or not that means we get to go to, like, the Citrus Bowl or whatever. Not the Citrus Bowl, the Camping World Bowl.
Camping World Bowl would probably be where we're going if we beat BC.
It feels pretty good. I mean, we'd have 2 games on them. We'd have at least a game on NC State plus a head-to-head win. I know that doesn't mean everything, but...
At least 2 games on Pitt.
Yes, plus their, like, fan base isn't any... I mean... I would say they're not better traveling-wise than ours.
No, I wouldn't.
So, yeah.
You'd spend all your money on 3 straight trips to Birmingham, and you try to go anywhere, Dan.
I get it. I don't even know how you get to Birmingham. Do they have an airport? I don't know how you get to Birmingham.
I mean, there's an airport, but I don't think you can get a direct flight from Pittsburgh there.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, they might have made one by the time they were done with the streak. Just the Pit Bowl special, and the plane is branded Pit, and you can hop in the airport for.
Yin's going to Birmingham now. I can't really do any Pittsburgh accent, but I enjoy the Pittsburgh accent. I can identify it. I can't do it at all, but I can say Yin's, and that's the extent of it.
That's fine. All right, so to wrap this episode up, Dan, I know you said you think Syracuse wins. What do you think the final score is?
I'm going to take SU solidly. I'm going to take Syracuse 37, BC 24.
All right. I like it.
I'm going by weird, like, usually I keep things pretty close. I'm going Syracuse wins this one pretty handily.
I'm going 38-28. I think if Tommy's under center, I think that SU is going to air it out early. And I think that the Orange are going to look pretty impressive early if he does so. I think attacking the strongest part of the BC defense could be a really good idea. And then if you get up a couple scores, then start pounding with the run. I mean, we have three running backs worth handing the ball off to. I'm sure all of them are anxious to pick up some more yards. Mo Neal is 210 yards away from the 1,000-yard mark, which well within reach if he ends up being like getting feature back carries in this game. We'll see, but I think Syracuse can win this one. I think, like I said, if they can start fast, they should be able to pull away and kind of hang on. I'm not expecting Dylan to be anywhere near 100%, and I think that's really going to be the deciding factor in this one.
Yeah, our effort in Dexter Williams and company actually makes me feel a lot better about Dylan. Like, even if he's, I mean, if he's 100%, that's not great, but like, I feel like we did a really good job against like holding Notre Dame back in that supposed running game, and we obviously, I mean, Ian Book tore us up, but
Brown, but we had to consider Book, like, and even in Pitt we had to consider Pickett, like Brown we have to consider, but not to the same extent. They don't have the talent out wide.
I think it'll be kind of similar to Pickett, but I think Pitt's running game is better than BC's, which has been pretty apparent. I mean, BC's is good, Pitt's is like really really good, and it has been apparent since in every game since we played them. And yeah, like you said about Mo, it'd be really cool to get him to 1,000. He needs what,
210. Yeah,
that's doable considering his, I mean, he hasn't had a huge workload, but the Louisville 159 helps, but he had 18 against Notre Dame. He's clearly the best, every down back on the team. So I do hope he continues to dip the ball.
Yeah. I mean, I would love it if we had like handed off to him like 5 to 7 more times against Louisville, just to see if he could top 200 and then he'd be much closer to the record.
We could have probably already have 1,000 if we really wanted him to, but we decided to do the smart thing and not, you know, exploit that too much in Louisville, which is why, you know, why bother? That was mean, that whole game.
Exactly, and a dominant win's a dominant win. If you win by 36-0 or 36-3, I don't need to feel more like a man just to beat Louisville by 80 instead of instead of 30. Like
the Louisville game, had we won. Honestly, would it feel a lot better about the Louisville game if we had only given up 16 points instead of 23? No, it would feel exactly the same. it was a definitive win. We stomped out a team that has given us issues in the past. So once again, Notre Dame fans, calm the hell down. Like, you're number 3 in the country. Put your insecurity away for a hot second if you possibly can.
Agreed.
It's like they're worried that they're going to get bounced down to 4th if they don't play super well every week, and then have Alabama just like pick them out of their teeth again.
Oh,
that's probably what it is. Like, they just want to keep in that third spot, because we know if Michigan beats Ohio State this weekend handily, Michigan might jump Notre Dame for the third spot, especially because Michigan has the extra game.
I don't think they can, if only because of the head-to-head. Like, I just think the head-to-head matters in that game enough.
We've seen conference championship week make, like, the Ohio State thing in 2014, like, the only reason they got in was because they had the conference championship game, and if Michigan goes and just stomps Ohio State and Northwestern, even with the head-to-head, like, I think there's a very good chance they jump to third, in which case Notre Dame then has to face Alabama, and I don't think they want that at all. If Tua's healthy, that's just not going to go well for them.
Well, I don't think Michigan's going to stomp either of these teams, and I think that's why they end up staying in fourth. Crazy things can happen, but I don't think anything crazy is going to happen this year.
I don't expect them to blow out. Actually, I'll probably end up picking Ohio State just as I need to see Michigan beat them once before I, like, get super comfortable with the idea, because it's happened once in the last 14 years, and that was when Luke Fickell was coaching Ohio State. So that, and also, I do think that if they get there, they'll beat Northwestern handily. I think Northwestern's good, but I think Michigan will be, like, all kinds of fired up.
I agree, but Northwestern also gave them a game earlier this year.
That's true. That was before Michigan was really firing.
Agreed. I still think that 1, 2, 3, 4 stay exactly the same. And I think we just set up Alabama to, like, squeak by Michigan. Clemson handles Notre Dame. And then Alabama, I think, probably runs over Clemson, because I feel like the worst thing that could have happened this past Saturday was a first half close call with the Citadel, because now Nick Saban's mad.
Nick Saban loved that. There's no chance that wasn't his ideal outcome of the first half. Because now he gets to be like, you guys aren't even better than the Citadel if you don't actually play hard. Look at that. That is embarrassing. That was definitely the best possible thing for him.
Oh, yeah, because now we get to watch them, you know, try to put up 70 against Auburn.
They're gonna try to make Auburn reconsider firing Belzon and eating whatever like the $50 million buyout or whatever it is.
Jesus. Anyway, sorry for that interlude into non-Syracuse talk, but you knew we couldn't help ourselves. Dan, anything else before we leave?
No, hopefully everyone. I just hope everyone like gets over this weekend. It was really tough being in New York because like there was the opportunity to go to the games, and I was at one of them. Like, tried to go to the Notre Dame game, but the tickets were just obscene. I think they were $400 dead in. I expected that to drop right before kickoff, and they didn't. They went up. It was a rough weekend here, but football, college football, I mean, the football season's going so far ahead of expectations already that I'm not going to get too down about one, like literally our first really bad performance of the year. We knew we had one in us. Basketball, I think you're right. Everyone should be disappointed, but it's not the end of the world. We might be okay. Like, we'll see. It's very early. So, enjoy Thanksgiving. Hopefully enjoy a win Saturday. I'm glad we're at noon. So we can enjoy the rest of our days. And then, onto bowl season. A nice wait to see what, either we're back in Yankee Stadium and can redeem ourselves, or we're heading down to Orlando for some nice weather.
I'm very excited. Everybody, that was Dan. I'm John. Thank you for listening to Troy Noon's and Absolute Podcast. You can rate, review, subscribe on iTunes, on Blog Talk, on wherever else you listen to podcasts. Hope everyone has a happy, safe, healthy Thanksgiving, and go Orange.
Go Orange.
At Jared, we know devotion isn't a once-a-year occasion. And once the flowers have wilted and the chocolates have disappeared, you'll still want them to know how much you care. Dare to give a gift that lasts this Valentine's Day with our incredible selection of jewelry. From delicate rose gold to bold black diamonds, Jared has hundreds of pieces under $299 and exclusive collections you won't find anywhere else. Shop online or find a store near you at jared.com and dare to be devoted. At Jared, we know devotion isn't a once-a-year occasion, and once the flowers have wilted and the chocolates have disappeared, you'll still want them to know how much you care. Dare to give a gift that lasts this Valentine's Day with our incredible selection of jewelry. From delicate rose gold to bold black diamonds, Jared has hundreds of pieces under $299 and exclusive collections you won't find anywhere else. Shop online or find a store near you at jared.com and dare to be devoted.